The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
For more than a decade, he's been your destination for news, opinion, and passion.
Good morning, Chris. Thanks for the great show every day.
Thank you so much for your honesty. You are a prophet, and I'm a witness.
So we invested an additional $12 billion into community banks because we know community banks are in the community and understand the needs and desires of that community as well as the talent and capacity of the community.
On the border, why is the border more overwhelmed under your watch?
Because there are three countries that are never had, there are fewer immigrants coming from Central America than from Mexico. It's a totally different circumstance.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer, and 990theanswer.com.
Offense, 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 everywhere you look. Ladies and gentlemen, I am starting to feel it's early. We're 48, 49 days away from Election Day, so it's still early and lots can happen. But at this hour, I'm here to tell you I am extraordinarily optimistic because Republicans are on offense, offense, offense. Everywhere you look. Did you hear? This is one of the more brilliant ideas. Everywhere you look, it seems Republicans are starting to hit their stride. Saw some polling yesterday that Herschel Walker is now leading Raphael Warnock down there in Georgia. And Brian Kemp running for governor against Stacey Abrams, it's not even close. In fact, Warnock, interestingly, is the only candidate statewide in Georgia who's keeping it competitive. And apparently, even among black voters, Democrats have huge, huge lagging indicators, which suggest there's big trouble for Stacey Abrams and most statewide Democrats. And right now, Herschel Walker is, as I said, leading. Now, it's a thin lead, but he's leading. So there's that. In Arizona, I think this is really smart. And I would submit, not that I need to tell the Dr. Oz people how to do their campaigning, because yesterday I said to you that I thought that one of the more brilliant moves I've ever seen, and I don't think it was even cynical. I think it was justified. Ron DeSantis and Greg Abbott sending all these illegal aliens to far-flung northeastern communities. Yesterday, the threat, we'll get into Grandpa's beach retreat, Rehoboth. It turned out not to be, but the threat was out there, and that was enough to all hands on deck. They went Annie Potts and Ghostbusters on them. They hit the alarm there at the White House. Don't you dare let them run over Rehoboth! And I mean, it was all hands on deck. They were running around like Keystone Cops yesterday, trying to get ready for the migrant flight that DeSantis was going to send to Rehoboth. So you have Martha's Vineyard, the white, rich, elitist liberals suing Ron DeSantis over this issue, which is wonderful. Eric Adams is threatening lawsuits and screaming and yelling, the mayor of New York. You have the Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser saying, we're not a border town. We're not equipped for this. Pritzker has called out the National Guard in Illinois to deal with it. Everywhere you look, Democrats are on their heels and Republicans are pushing. And now out in Arizona, Carrie Lake. I haven't followed this closely. Carrie Lake is the former news anchor. And I think what makes her particularly interesting is news anchors know how to communicate by training. So she knows all their gimmicks. She knows all their games. To actually take somebody from the news media as a conservative. You know, I've got a friend in Missouri who decided to run in a very, very crowded primary. He left anchoring morning news, a Fox affiliate, interestingly, in the Kansas City metro area. He left morning news after, I don't know, 20 plus, almost 30 successful years in morning television. People wondered, why the hell would you ever do it? He said, I can't live with myself anymore, Chris. He and I had talked offline for politics, in politics for years. He decided to get in the race. He won his primary. He's probably going to go on and win the general and become the next Missouri representative to Washington, D.C. Really, really cool. So after a 30-year television career, he's going to go to Washington and try his hand at representing the folks in his district. I think that's amazing and really admirable because it was a cushy job, pretty well known in his community, pretty famous in his community. You know, one of these deals where he walks in and doesn't have to pay for a drink, doesn't have to pay for dinner, that kind of stuff, you know. Because after a while, it's like when you're a news anchor, Jim Gardner, when you're, you know, when you're the head coach of the Eagles in Philadelphia, you know, you don't need for much. It's a pretty comfortable life. You know, you probably get a free car from the local car dealership as long as you say, hi, I'm fill in the blank for, you know, John's dealership. You know, you just don't need for much. It's a comfortable life is my point. Carrie Lake, same thing. She was a very, very well-liked news anchor out in the Phoenix area, I believe, on a Fox affiliate. And she, likewise, couldn't live with herself anymore and what the news media had become, and so she decided to jump in and become a candidate for governor. And she won the primary. And apparently the woman that she is running against on the Democrat side, she will not debate her. Does that sound familiar?
All too familiar.
Scared to death of her. As a matter of fact, and I would be too. I don't blame her for being scared to death. Katie Hobbs is the woman running against her. I don't know who this Katie Hobbs is, but have you seen or heard much of Carrie Lake? We haven't talked a lot about her here on this show, but if you're not familiar with her, she is a... Oof, I don't know how to say it. She's a nut cutter, folks. I wouldn't want to debate her. She's scary. And by scary, I mean smart, razor sharp. She knows the issues. She has a command of the English language. She knows her stuff. And I mean, she can slice and dice. It would look, you know, like you go to one of those Japanese hibachi steakhouse things. Things flying everywhere. Gateway Pundit recently reported, despite multiple attempts by Carrie Lake and the Elections Commission in Arizona to hold a debate, Katie Hobbs refuses. Hobbs didn't even show up to her own primary debate, apparently. So 1 month ago, Carrie Lake even offered to allow Katie Hobbs to choose the time, choose the date, choose the moderators, choose the debate questions. This woman, Hobbs, still won't do it. So she's not even setting conditions. She's like, let me at her. And this Hobbs woman won't do it. She's scared to death. So, In another masterstroke, much like Dr. Oz going to Kensington and helping people with Narcan and getting off fentanyl, taking them literally off the streets, highlighting the needles and the depravity on video and taking the media with them. No politician has done that. Much like DeSantis and Abbott sending illegal aliens to these left-wing communities and shoving it in their faces, Carrie Lake is now going on what she calls an Ask Me Anything tour. Genius. She's just going to show up and take unscripted questions from anybody that shows up. Carrie Lake touring Arizona holding open forums because she won't be granted a debate with this Katie Hobbs person. Video announcement for the tour. Lake tells Arizona, I'm applying for the job of governor and you, the voter, are the hiring manager. She's got a logo and everything. Carrie Lake's Ask Me Anything tour. Genius. I might suggest, and again, I don't mean to tell the Dr. Oz people how to do their business, but I might suggest this is an angle. I think that's pretty strong, don't you?
I do. I think Mastriano should model the same thing.
Agreed. That's a great point. Yeah, same thing for Mastriano. Ask Me Anything.
Because, I mean, there was another hit piece again in the Inquirer about the Confederate uniform yesterday. It's like, how many hit pieces are there going to be about this?
Well, yeah, and Fetterman, Dr. Oz says crudité and lives in New Jersey. That's it. So we have the Democrats have boiled this down to Civil War reenactment uniforms and vegetable trays. That's what they think is going to win them this fall. While you look around the economy, ladies and gentlemen, I don't want to dispirit you, but we're headed for some bad stuff. Interest rates are going to take another huge hike today. And that means the cost of everything that you do, if you spend money, if you borrow money, if you carry any kind of credit card debt, if you carry a car loan of any kind, if you're trying to get a home loan, interest rates are going to continue to go through the roof. In fact, I have a story. This is not pertinent to here yet, but here's today's story in the New York Times. Crippling energy bills force Europe's factories to go dark. Manufacturers are furloughing workers and shutting down lines because they can't pay gas and electric charges. I would say Europe's energy policies causing Europe's energy bills to be crippling, thus causing Europe's factories to go dark. That's a critical piece of information. Before you talk about crippling energy prices, you have to talk about crippling energy policies, which Europe has implemented, and we're implementing the same here. The impact of Russia's abrupt cutoff of gas to Europe has doused the business world with new risks. Energy prices have climbed in Europe so fast that factories all over Europe are just shutting down. In the New York Times, they profile very specific businesses to kind of personalize it. But this is coming. I have a story in front of me today about layoffs. Massive layoffs, as a matter of fact. A wave of layoffs sweeping the United States. If you haven't heard it, here are the major companies so far that have announced them. Gap, laying off 500 jobs. Snap, laying off 20% of their employees. Late last month it began. A 6,400-person workforce. Wayfair, 870 employees will be laid off. The furniture and home goods company. Robinhood, more than 1,000 people will be laid off this year. That's the private investing app that became so popular during the GameStop rebellion. Peloton, you know them. Turns out a lot of people don't have walking around money to buy those. I don't know how expensive they are, but they ain't cheap. 4,150 people are about to be laid off from Peloton. Shopify, 1,000 workers. In a memo to employees, CEO Toby Lutke said that the company, which makes tech that powers businesses' online stores, had bet big on pandemic-era e-commerce boom. It's now clear the bet didn't pay off. 7-Eleven, 880 jobs going to be cut this year. Vimeo, the video hosting platform, cut 6% of its staff. Tesla. Elon Musk, the electric car, 229 employees laid off. Electric car maker Rivian, I don't know what that is, 6% of their workforce has been cut. Something called GoPuff, 10% of their staff. Remax, the real estate company, cutting 17% of its workforce. JP Morgan, 1,000 of their workers cut. Real estate brokerage company Compass cut 10% of their workforce. Redfin, the real estate brokerage, 6%. Noticing a trend here? You noticing that it's real estate, or you noticing that it's online shopping? Coinbase. And much like Robinhood, these are where people are putting their walking around money. You know, during the great trillion-dollar money print where we were handing out government checks to people not to work, all of a sudden things like Coinbase and things like Robinhood were exploding because people who were living at home with mom were getting, you know, thousands of dollars in free money from the government. And they were like, hey, I'm flush with cash. And they were throwing it in these investments themselves. People playing, you know, stocks in Coinbase and That's all dried up. Everybody's now tapping into their savings. Everybody, you know, the checks have stopped flowing. And as such, the investments into these vessels have stopped. So Coinbase laying off 18% of their workforce. Carvana laying off. What's happened to cars? 2,500 employees laid off. Something called Reef Technology. I've got this whole list in front of me. 750 people. Something called Better. 4,000 people. Noom. 500 people. 20% of the staff of Thrasio, the company known for creating the Amazon aggregator market. An unknown number of people in mortgage lending at Wells Fargo going to be cut. One of the world's largest publicly traded cannabis companies, 250 people cut. Food 52. I don't know what that even is. Food publication and retailer, 20 people have been laid off. Cameo. Cameo. You know what that is? That's celebrities that you can log on and pay, mostly D-lister celebrities, to record messages for whomever you'd like if you pay them a fee. So, like, I don't know. You could pay Snoop Dogg $100 to say happy birthday to your sister if she's a big Snoop Dogg fan. That kind of stuff.
Yeah, when I was getting into it online with Mike Missinelli, I told all his fans that I'd do his cameo for half the price.
Yeah. 87 people were laid off from Cameo. PayPal, 83 people. German grocery store, something called Gorillas, 300 people. Netflix, 150 people. This list goes on and on and on. The layoffs are coming. Crippling energy bills forcing Europe's factories to go dark. Food costs are going to go through the roof. I had those stories yesterday. Gasoline prices are sure to increase next year. Again, not to be a doomsayer, just to tell you the truth here. And that Husk, the incredible Husk, went on with the haughty Scott Pelley on Sunday and said everything's just fine. What the hell are you complaining about out there? No, I got to tell you, I'm not happy about the ruin. I'm not happy about the destruction. I am very happy that Republicans now officially seem to be shoving it directly in their face. Democrats are playing defense everywhere you look. They've been trotting out a lot of these phony polls to prop up all their flailing candidates. I've been warning you about that, not to get dispirited and depressed. Dr. Oz warned about that. A lot of fake news to try to convince you, oh, Democrats are really rolling and Biden is winning, winning, winning. That stupid 60 Minutes piece, if you watched it on Sunday, God bless you if you did. I did. Talk about getting my blood pressure through the roof. They opened the whole thing with Joe Biden has really been on a roll. Joe Biden has, after a string of wins and a hugely successful summer, Joe Biden hit a rare bump. Everywhere you look, Democrats are now on defense and having to explain this disaster. Inflation, open borders, unprecedented attacks on children. It's all on the ballot. I mean, when you have people like Charlemagne the God, can you explain who he is, Fast Eddie?
Sure. I mean, he hosts probably one of the most popular morning shows nationwide, The Breakfast Club. That's where every politician, it's like the measure.
That's where Hillary said she carries hot sauce in her purse.
Yeah.
Remember that? That's where, if you want street cred with black voters, you're supposed to go on The Breakfast Club, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Even Rush, when Rush Limbaugh was alive, even Rush agreed to appear, I think, if I'm not mistaken, with The Breakfast Club. To try to have a respectful debate. This is apparently, yeah, Charlemagne the God is where you go kneel at the altar of street cred with black America, supposedly. I didn't know this, but everyone who's black in the United States listens to Charlemagne the God. It is some kind of law at birth. It's on your birth certificate. You're given a key code to tap into Charlemagne the God show and The Breakfast Club, I guess. I didn't know that. I wish I had a secret programming strategy like that. All of one demographic must listen to my show. So apparently Charlemagne the God is the source for all black people. I mean, that's the way they talk about him. I'm just saying. I don't believe that. I'm just saying that's what they seem to report. So even he is praising DeSantis for flying migrants to Martha's Vineyard.
For months, Republican governors have sent busloads of illegal immigrants to sanctuary cities like New York, D.C., and Chicago with the message of, if you like them so much, they're yours. Okay? Well, just in time for Hispanic Heritage Month, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis upped the game by sending two planefuls of immigrants to the East Coast elite's favorite vacation island, Martha's Vineyard, Massachusetts. I personally think it's genius. But I wish that governors like Ron DeSantis and Greg Abbott would give Democratic governors and mayors more of a heads up, because then that would expose the hypocrisy of the Democrats, which is they don't want immigrants here either.
Ooh. Ooh. Folks, this story has legs, as they say. And so does the inflation story and this economic story. These two stories, by the way, they are part and parcel of the same thing. One begets the other. The 2020 midterm elections are, you know, and I know we say this a lot, I know this is thrown around a lot, but I can't imagine a more consequential set of elections than this fall. Do you want your liberty back? Do you want your country back? Do you want control of this madness or not? This is a test of our resolve to protect and defend what is precious and critical for the survival of this country and our economy. Everything is on the line this fall. If we're able to take back the House and the Senate, then the stakes get even higher in 2024. We have a tremendous opportunity. This is really a remarkable time to be alive. This is an inflection point in this country's history. We're watching its destruction in real time, and we can stop it. There is something we can do. These are some very dark, very evil, very menacing times. No thinking person doesn't understand what's headed our way. All you need to do is look at Europe. I mean, we're living a lot of it, I'm sorry to say already. It's already here. But it's even worse in Europe. These are dark times, metaphorically and literally. And if we don't take steps to fight these people, hell-bent on destroying your family and our borders and the economy, this is a threat. This is a threat to every single one of us. It's why making open borders the center of attention is crucial. Story after story after story in front of me today has indicted the Democrat Party. This forgiveness of student loan debt is enraging voters. Everything Democrats do is an outrage. And you're about to feel more. You're about to see more economic shock today when they announce interest rate hikes. Actually, the markets may like that a little bit. I don't know, because inevitably, in theory, that's supposed to slow inflation. We'll see. But the point is, everything's going to get more expensive for you, and you're going to feel it. And what have Democrats got? What have they got? They hide. They won't debate. They tell jokes about vegetable trays and Civil War uniforms? What do they have to sell you? What record have they got to show for themselves except destruction and chaos? I'm not saying it's over. 48, 49 days is still a lot of time left. But I am saying this is becoming more and more profoundly obvious to anybody who's got a pulse and is remotely thinking clearly. The destruction of the country is on the ballot. Choose accordingly. I told you that the most significant news to come out of that, well, other than maybe President Husk, the incredible Husk, suggesting that we will go to war with everyone that he wants to go to war with, continue to stay in war with Russia. He promises war with China. I mean, that's probably the most consequential, but in my view, I always thought that the biggest news to come out of the 60 Minutes interview on Sunday was what? What did I say, Fast Eddie?
Well, the president declared the pandemic over.
Yeah, that's right. When he declared the pandemic over, I knew it. When I heard him say it, I thought that's going to be a disaster. There's nothing that these people covet more than the panic porn of illness to use it as a means to control you. It has always been a means to control you. It was the most useful. There hasn't been, short of them rounding you up and putting you in cages, which they may not be opposed to, given that speech from the Husk in front of Independence Hall during Labor Day, that may be coming. Since you're an enemy of the state, they may just round us up like the Democrats did the Japanese during World War II and put us in camps. Might be coming. But until then, the closest thing they could get to was COVID. That was as close as they could get because they could manage us all. Democrats, of course, willfully went along with it because they are naturally piddlers like small puppies on the floor. They don't know what to do unless an almighty government is telling them what to do. And they never question it. Government's never wrong, and there's no reason to ever question the authority of government and what CNN tells you. The rest of us, though, had lots of questions early. So when Biden declared it done, and just in case you missed it, let's go back to Sunday and tick, 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 tick. 60 Minutes there at the auto show in Detroit, the haughty Scott Pelley talking with the incredible Husk, and this is how it happened.
Mr. President, first Detroit auto show in 3 years.
Yeah.
Is the pandemic over?
The pandemic is over. We still have a problem with COVID. We're still doing a lot of work on it. But the pandemic is over. If you notice, no one's wearing masks. Everybody seems to be in pretty good shape. And so I think it's changing, and I think this is a perfect example.
This has not set well with the team at the White House. And the people that have made money off of telling you how to live your life and how to move about the country, if in fact you're allowed at all, and what to wear on your person, and what news you're allowed to consume. The Bond villain, guy with a giant Adam's apple, Vivek Murthy, the Surgeon General, had this to say about that yesterday.
So two very different views there of the state of the pandemic. Is the pandemic over?
Willie, it's good to see you as well. I actually don't think they're all that different. What the president's reflecting is the fact that we've made tremendous progress against COVID-19. We're in a very different place now than we were at the beginning of this pandemic, with significantly lower death rates. We have all of our children back in school. We have people able to go back to work, families and friends able to see each other. But he also said, you know, we have more work to do on COVID, and that's right. And that's what Dr. Fauci and others have expressed as well. You know, we're losing about 400 people a day on average for this virus. We need to get that number lower. We have people who are struggling with long COVID. We need to understand more about long COVID and how to prevent it. And we also, thankfully, have a new updated vaccine that's available that can extend people's protection, strengthen their protection against the worst outcomes of COVID. We need people to take that vaccine. So there is more work to do, no doubt. But we are in a much better place than we were at the beginning of this pandemic.
Well, of course, that goes without saying. And I mean, people effectively are treating it like it's over here in London.
That was Biden's whole point. No, it's not that far off. What I'm saying and what he said are not that far off. They're totally contradictory, but they're not that far off. You see, because they can't outright come out and totally, I mean, they can't flatly say, he's a stupid old fool who doesn't run anything. And unfortunately, we have to let him talk sometimes. And it's always humiliating and crippling to our agenda when he does, but we have to let him. The fact of the matter is he's not running anything. He doesn't make decisions. He shouldn't speak out of turn. But we have to let him because we're all pretending he's running something. That's what they'd say if they were telling you the truth. They can't tell you the truth, so they say things like, well, what I'm saying and what he's saying really aren't that far off. It's just that everything I'm about to say totally contradicts what he just said. And no enterprising member of the journalism community would even think to ask somebody like the Surgeon General, sounds to me like you're saying that this is very, very serious and that the president got it wrong. Sounds to me like you are, in fact, contradicting the commander-in-chief. Is he just not as smart as you? Is he not privy to the same information you are? Why is that? Vivek Murthy wasn't alone. Dr. Anthony Fauci Of course, remember, these guys' entire existence depends on this virus, too. You can't be famous without a virus that puts you on magazine covers, can you? President Biden caused waves when he declared in a 60 Minutes interview that the COVID pandemic is over. Chief Medical Advisor Dr. Anthony Fauci joined those who sought to walk that statement back. Fauci aimed to qualify the president's optimistic remark, acknowledging that while the worst of the virus is over, it still remains a concern. What doesn't remain a concern? What illness, what virus, what? I have no, in my church alone, in 1 month, two men in their early 50s have had massive heart attacks. One, unfortunately, lost his battle with it. The other one survived it. What doesn't remain a constant concern? How many deaths happen, I don't know, daily in this country? Do we keep stats on that? How many people die of things in this country every day? Vivek Murthy says we are still losing about 400 people a day on average to this virus. To the virus or the fact that they're very compromised people? To the virus or the fact that they're 400 pounds? To the virus or the fact that they're infirm? To the virus or the fact that they've got other illnesses that compromise their system and won't allow them to ward it off? To the virus by itself, are healthy people, 400 healthy people a day walking about the country and dropping dead? No, of course not. And every thinking American understands that, which was back to the Husk's original point. Hey, look around! Look, we're walking through the auto show. Ain't nobody wearing masks. It's over. See? The Husk is, it pains me to say it, he's right. The American people have moved on. We're aware of things that could kill us all the time, every day. I could get food poisoning tonight and die. I love that the new metric for the Biden administration is no deaths. In a nation of 350 million people, our new metric must be zero death. Fast Eddie, is there a stat on how many people die in this country every day?
So number of deaths, like for the year, 3,383,000. But it says the death rate, 1,027 deaths per 100,000 people.
Okay. So we lose thousands every week to something, yeah. You can safely say, in the United States. Thousands of people every week. You just don't think about it. I mean, it's a macabre, it's a morbid, it's a sad, I guess, thing, if you think about it that way. But it's in a nation of 330 million people, thousands are dying of something every week. Safe to say?
Oh, yes. Yes.
So it sounds less dramatic if you take that information and then say 400 people are dying of this virus every week. I don't know that that's true. Are they dying of the virus or with it? They're still not telling you the truth about that. If somebody's in the hospital sick with whatever. I mean, for instance, the guy I told you, massive heart attack, 51 years of age, okay? Massive heart attack, quadruple bypass surgery. He goes into the hospital for quadruple bypass surgery, makes it out, catches COVID while he's in the hospital. Now, and again, he's fine. He came through it and everything's fine. What if that guy had died in the hospital after having caught COVID? What would they say? Oh, he died of COVID. Or was it the massive open heart surgery he just underwent? Could that have been a factor, right? We're still not telling the truth. We never, as a country, told the truth about what was causing people to die. Never. We always left people with the impression that every COVID case was a killer, when in fact it was never true. The overwhelming majority of COVID cases are not killers and not even close to killers. They'll make you sick, but they're not going to kill you. That's the overwhelming truth about most people. Always, even in the height of this thing, before shots, before we even understood it, it was always true COVID was never going to kill the vast majority of us. And they are still trying to scare the crap out of you with the idea that if you don't get that shot, you could die. You were never in a statistical vortex to die from COVID. It was never statistically true, if you're an otherwise healthy person, that COVID was going to kill you. Never. It was especially never true for kids. And if you noticed as we head into the fall, how they push, they are spending a gazillion dollars on marketing this shot. And that, to me, if you want to know the truth of the matter, that's why you see all these people running around screeching about Biden declaring the pandemic over on Sunday on 60 Minutes. When the Incredible Husk said it was over, that does not help drive Big Pharma's push to inject you with the damn shot, does it? That's the problem. And an official Washington, I don't exactly know how we prove this. I'm sure in time, if somebody really wanted to dig and had the resources, they could. Official Washington and a lot of these scumbags that are pushing this shot, they are lining their pockets. These people are getting rich as hell off of Big Pharma. Directly or indirectly. The United States government may as well be the United States of Pfizer. I mean, they may as well, take one of those lights that you can flash up, sponsorship lights. Just put a Pfizer logo on the Capitol Dome is what they may as well do. Just flash Pfizer on the White House. Pfizer owns Washington, official Washington, lock, stock, and barrel, which is why all of these people are demanding that you go out and continue to inject yourself with this unproven shot for a virus that is not going to kill the vast majority of us. They're pushing it harder than ever before. He really stepped in it, really ruined their game. Real health problems? John Fetterman, Pennsylvania Senate candidate. Hannity last night had Dr. Nicole Sapphire and Dr. Robert Siegel. They were both discussing Fetterman's health. It's interesting. I didn't have this clip. I actually saw Hannity aired. I guess Monday, Fetterman presided over the legislature in Harrisburg. And Hannity had a montage of that performance on Monday. And again, this is just him showing up, doing his job as the guy that's presiding over the Senate in Harrisburg. Listen to some of this.
The Senate will come to order. The session will be opened with prayer. Prayer will be offered by the chaplain of the Senate. Our next of business is communications. The chair lays before the Senate the Auditor General's debt certification, which the clerk will read in court.
In accordance with the provisions of
this
Article 8.
This will be noted, and the journal will be filed in the library. Thomas Ellis, as a member of the State Horse Racing Commission, and Noreen Frederick, as a member of the Behavioral Health and Commission for Adult Mental Health. The ayes have it, and the Senate stands in recess until Tuesday, February 20th, 2022, at 1 p.m., unless sooner recalled by the President pro tempore.
That's audio of what happened on Monday. Fast Eddie?
I mean, you're not saying things. Senate pro tempore? Like, what the hell is that? Like, it's not, you're not, you don't
know. He's not even aware that people were speaking. He couldn't even hear that people were speaking and conducting official business before he plowed through the script that he was supposed to read. He's all of that, by the way, that he was saying he was reading.
Yeah.
Barely. That's just what happened. I'm sorry if that makes you uncomfortable. I'm sorry if you think that's mean, but that's just what happened on Monday. Dr. Nicole Sapphire had this in analysis afterward.
Well, Sean, first of all, we should say stroke is very common. Every 40 seconds in the United States, someone does have a stroke. And the harsh reality is about 25% of those people will have another stroke within their life. Now, we know that John Fetterman had a stroke. We don't know the specifics of it. We just know what the campaign has told us. But based on what they have said, he is struggling from some level of aphasia, which is difficulty understanding written and spoken language and also acting it himself. That can be very frustrating for someone and can take years of aggressive therapy to really see any benefit. So I don't think that it is indecent to ask for full transparency of what he is suffering from. Yes, his campaign has said that he has taken some tests, he's passed them, but we have seen that he is not doing live debates, he's not answering live questions, and this could indicate that he actually is struggling, and they're not being wholly transparent about it.
Yeah. Okay. When we talk, that's good. He is struggling. Of course he is. That's why he doesn't want to do it. Here's Mark. I said Robert. Robert Siegel. That's from my days working in the NPR desk. Sorry. I'm Robert Siegel. He used to host All Things Considered. Oof. I'm not even sure he's alive anymore. Sorry, that was a throwback. Mark Siegel, he jumped in after Nicole Sapphire here.
You know, Dr. Siegel, we listed all these radical positions that he holds. He has not answered a single question from the media. It's 49 days till Election Day. Early voting started yesterday in Pennsylvania, and he won't debate until, what, October 25th. Half the vote may be in by then, or a very high percentage of the vote may be in by then. To me, that is so fundamentally unfair to the people of Pennsylvania, and I don't even think they should make concessions for him, even though some may say, oh, it's okay to make a concession and let him read a teleprompter. But in all honesty, can he do the job? And can the people of Pennsylvania, shouldn't they be able to see him before they vote, not after, you know, half the state had voted already?
Absolutely, Sean. The public has a right to know. I agree with Nicole about debate being a test of almost cognitive function at an advanced level. You know, the two cognitive tests he released this week are very mild, and they don't look at executive function. Can you juggle different things at once? Can you make decisions? Can you plan? They don't include the Montreal assessment test that Trump took. It doesn't include the Oxford test that's used specifically for stroke. I want all of that. I want to see the records. The man has a heart, by the way, that's ballooned out. He has a defibrillator. He has atrial fibrillation, which is an abnormal rhythm, and he's on a very strong blood thinner, and he has a pacemaker. I want to know what his last echocardiogram showed.
By the way, do you believe the heart issue is connected to the stroke issue?
I think that's likely. And by the way, Dr. Sapphire made this point indirectly already, too, which is he's at a risk for another stroke with a heart like that. Absolutely. And the irregular rhythm.
So those are two medical doctors. You know, is that cruel or is that just true? So that's a real health risk. COVID is not a real health risk. It is more electing this man to the United States Senate to represent you and me is more of a risk than COVID is to you and me. I'll promise you that. All right. Coming up, as I said, Ron Vitello is just around the corner. Emerald Robinson going to be with us today. As you heard Hannity reference, early voting has officially started. This makes people very mad. It's so funny. They say, there's no early voting in Pennsylvania. Well, no, effectively there is. It's called mail-in voting. And it did start this week. And it is true that John Fetterman doesn't want to debate or be visible or public. Neither does Josh Shapiro, by the way. They don't want to. They just think they can wait this out. They think they can spend the next month just waiting and just hiding and tweeting. And they'll just win an abstention. I don't think so. I think that we're going to start to see the economic story deteriorate. I think we're going to see the national security story continue to deteriorate. And I think it's going to force these little worms, Shapiro and Fetterman, out of their holes to discuss it. I think a lot of media is pressing them to discuss it. So, yes, the mail-in vote has begun, and we're going to talk with J. Christian Adams about that from the Public Interest Legal Foundation. National Voter Registration Day. It's a big thing with the pro sports team.
This
too.
Is WNTP, Philadelphia's AM 990. The Answer, a Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM. For more than a decade, he's been your destination for news, opinion, and passion.
Thanks for hitting so many nails on the head. And your callers, your audience, is to be appreciated, too.
You really have helped to keep me sane, and I listen to you pretty much every single morning.
Staying on the border and the record number of arrests that we are seeing, the president campaigned on addressing the root causes of migration. He's been in office now for almost 2 years. We are seeing these apprehensions reach record levels. What exactly went wrong here?
So let me just give you, just to put it into context and talk a little bit about the facts of what you just mentioned, the numbers that we have seen that was announced by DHS. Yesterday. So first, these people are fleeing communism, as we have said, as you heard DHS say as well. Falling authoritarian regimes in Venezuela, as Nicaragua and Cuba are causing a new migration challenge across the Western Hemisphere. So what we're seeing is a new, definitely a new pattern.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer and 990theanswer.com.
great to have you here today. Hope you're doing well. Middle of the week already. Just rolling on. Listen fast, because we've got a lot to get to today. Telephone number 610-850-0990. 610-850-0990. We're online at 990theanswer.com. So the new line from the official White House on why millions of people are pouring across our southern border. The new line is, hey, this is completely different than what it used to be. A reporter shouts this to Biden yesterday. Here's Grandpa's answer. Why this is completely different. This is a problem that we can't control, even though they would deny that it's not in control. They say that the border is completely secure. Pepe Le Pew said it again yesterday. Our border is not wide open.
On the border, why is the border more overwhelmed under your watch, Mr. President?
Because there are three countries that are never have. There are fewer immigrants coming from Central America and from Mexico. This is a totally different circumstance. What's on my watch now is Venezuela, Cuba, and Nicaragua. And the ability to send them back to those states is not rational. You could send them back and have them. We're working with Mexico and other countries to see if we can stop the flow. But that's the difference. Thank you.
Yeah. Venezuela, Nicaragua, Cuba. That's the new talking points. Fleeing communism. And there's nothing we can do about that. We can't send them back. This is new. Unlike before. And that Ron DeSantis and anyone else would fly them to our lily white communities of Rehoboth and Martha's Vineyard. How dare he? Ron DeSantis had this to say in response yesterday.
Quoting him, he said, you and Governor Abbott need to stop acting like, or start acting like governors and stop acting like human traffickers. First, what is your response to that? And second, is there a second migrant flight going from Texas to Delaware? Right,
so when Biden is flying these people all over the fruited plain in the middle of the night, I didn't hear a peep out of those people. Okay? I didn't hear a peep. I haven't heard a peep about all the people that have been told by Biden you can just come in, and they're going, they're being abused by the cartels, they're drowning in the Rio Grande. You had 50 that died in some shed in Texas. I heard no outrage about any of that. I haven't heard outrage about all the fentanyl that's come across the border that's killing Americans in record numbers. I don't hear outrage about the criminal aliens that have gotten through and have then victimized people, not only in Florida, but all throughout the country. I didn't hear any outrage about that. The only thing I hear them getting upset about is you have 50 that end up in Martha's Vineyard. Then they get really upset.
Brilliant. Just brilliant. Remember when Ted Cruz came on this show? Ron Vitello is the former chief of the U.S. Border Patrol. He's a retired acting ICE director. Ted Cruz came on this show a few months ago, Mr. Vitello, and he spoke of this horrific act of rapists at the border hanging the underwear of young women and girls they've raped on bushes and trees as a little tribute to their horrors. I don't know if you can confirm that, but to add that to the list of awful things we're seeing at the southern border. And DeSantis is, of course, right. You don't hear anything about that. But, oh, to fly them to Martha's Vineyard is the most cruel thing we've ever seen. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Chris. The hypocrisy is very thick with the Democrats, with the media, with the social elites, the people who live in Martha's Vineyard that can't stand to have 50 people from another country arrive on their shore. This president... The lady at the White House talking about there's this new phenomenon going on at the border. All of a sudden, you know, we have these people fleeing communism. You know, what have they done? You know, the president says he's never seen anything. We've never seen anything like it. Yeah, you're right. You never seen anything like it because when he inherited this job, when he got elected and became the president on January 20th, they had 40-year lows at the southwest border. And make no mistake, there are people coming from Venezuela and Nicaragua, not in the numbers that are now, but because he opened it all up, he ripped down the policies that were working at our southwest border. And now there's some new phenomenon, these people, and we're going to ask for Mexico for help. Why would Mexico help us, Chris? Why would they try to control their southern border when we're letting every other person who arrives on our southwest border we're letting them go into the United States. What are those 50 people that got on the plane from Martha's Vineyard? They were in CBP custody and were released. Why would Mexico help us if our policy is to take people into custody, process them for asylum, and then let them go anywhere they want to go in the United States? Why would Mexico help that?
Ron Vitello, former chief of the U.S. Border Patrol, retired acting ICE director. When you heard that Abbott and DeSantis were going to start busing and or flying some of these migrants very specifically to places like the front yard of the Naval Observatory in Washington, D.C., Kamala Harris's home, or in Pritzker's, Illinois, where he's called out the National Guard, Martha's Vineyard, New York City, and you hear them all screaming and yelling. In fact, Muriel Bowser just said, we're not a southern border town. We can't handle this.
We're not a border town. We don't have an infrastructure to handle this type of a level of immigration to our city. But we'll create a new normal here in our infrastructure and have a humane welcome for people and an efficient, service provision. But we don't have the ability. We're not Texas.
When you hear that, when you saw this whole thing unfold, what were your thoughts?
Well, she's not Texas. What does that even mean? What about the thousands of people who have evaded authorities at our southwest border and are already in Washington, D.C.? What happens to those folks? You know, the hypocrisy is thick. She ran a campaign to become the mayor as being inclusive to all people. We don't care whether you have immigration status or not. You know, their police department refuses to cooperate on criminal illegal aliens. And now all of a sudden, a couple of thousand people in the nation's capital, and she's begging for resources. She's asking to deploy the National Guard because they're not Texas. Yeah, you're dang right you're not Texas, because Texas is being flooded by thousands every single day.
Yeah, the idea that Texas somehow is built and equipped for 2 million people to come pouring into their state, it's insulting.
Yeah.
No, they're not.
It's incredible. It's incredible. And then you got to hand it to these governors. You got to hand it to DeSantis and Governor Abbott. They are desperate to call attention to this problem, which is acute. I mean, we are all at risk when there's 8,000 people coming across the southwest border illegally every single 24 hours. It puts us all at risk. Almost 800 people who are on the terrorist screening database watch list. These are people that our own government has identified through intelligence that are risks to this country. And those are the ones that have been encountered. Let's not forget that if 6,000 people came across the border last night, there's at least 1,500 or 2,000 that were not encountered by law enforcement at all. That means they came across the border and they're coming to a city near you and nobody knows who they are. Nobody knows what their background is and what their intent to come to the United States is.
You know, Ron, do you guys have reason to believe now that word has kind of just gone out globally? You want to get into the United States, the easiest, fastest way to do it is head to the south and come up through the southern border. Is that kind of globally understood by anybody who would like to break in?
It is. It is. These cartels and this human trafficking chain, they're very responsive to what the conditions are and what the incentives are. And then people who want a better life, they respond to incentives as well. So if every other person who comes to the border gets released, what do? They get on Facebook. They get on Instagram. They get on the telephone in the old days. And they call back home and they tell everybody, hey, look, we're not being detained. We're not being held until we have our due process in immigration court. They're letting us go. And you can see that by, you know, the thousands that are coming on the buses, the airplane that went to Martha's Vineyard, you know, they've been released by authorities in the United States. And that encourages all of their friends and all of the people that they influence, all of their family. And then that cascades around the world. The message is out. Our border is open. And this president specifically has said, you know, every chance he's gotten to talk about immigration enforcement or talk about what goes on the border, he blames someone else. And tells the world that he's not really all that interested if people are here in the United States illegally. He said that multiple times. The secretary has made statements that if you are in the country illegally, that you've only broken immigration law and federal law by crossing the border illegally, then you're not a target for ICE enforcement. What signal have they sent? These are their words. This is not hyperbole. This is not politics. They've told the world that if you come here and you're here illegally, that we're not interested in arresting you and sending you back.
When you hear all these people, I mean, it doesn't matter. I see it on social media. I see it, you know, on unintelligible shows like The View. All these people that say it is so cruel and inhumane to play games with the lives of these people. DeSantis and Abbott busing them to Martha's Vineyard, flying them to, you know, potentially Delaware or Illinois. It's so mean-spirited. It's playing games with human lives. When you hear all of this sympathy pouring out from critics of DeSantis and Abbott, what is your reaction? Because I know you've seen in real time over the years what's going on at the border. These people are outraged at flights and buses to liberal cities. That's what they're saying. So what's your reaction?
Yeah, they want to be all inclusive unless it comes to their front door. You know, the hypocrisy is thick. You know, who? Just imagine the treatment of these folks, right? They had a brief stay at CBP. They were released on their own recognizance to go and find their way into the United States. And the governors have offered them a motor coach bus ride. It's not the school bus your kids are taking to school every morning. A motor coach that's air conditioning. It has a restroom, snack bags, water, breaks. This is like
were they kidnapped? How about this charge that they're kidnapped, Ron? Have you heard that? They've been kidnapped. It's Newsom. Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, says that DeSantis is kidnapping people.
It's ridiculous. Kidnapping, you know, here, sign this release form that says you're going to get on this motor coach and be taken to the city that you care to go to. That's not kidnapping. And this sheriff in Bear County ought to be embarrassed. His department, he's embarrassing the whole state, saying that he's going to look into criminal charges for the flight that went to Martha's Vineyard. It's ridiculous. You know, it's all well and good. Everybody wants to be inclusive. We want to be sanctuary cities and states and all that until they come to your neighborhood.
Ron Vitello is a former chief of the U.S. Border Patrol, retired acting ICE director. I am hearing and seeing more and more about, you know, dozens and dozens, you know, when video is shown of people waiting to be processed or have been detained. I'm struck by the number of those coming from India, those coming from Pakistan, and other, you know, countries, Europe, Arab countries, Middle Eastern countries. What is that exactly? I don't think that all those people necessarily mean harm. I don't think necessarily any of them are doing anything everyone else is doing, just kind of trying to come into the country to do whatever. But it is curious, is it not? I mean, you got to imagine some of those people mean us harm.
Well, we're all at risk. There's no effective screening for the thousands of people who come in every day from wherever, right? And some of these places, we have concerns about some of those neighborhoods in the United States, Pakistan, Afghanistan, China, people from China that are coming here. You know, we have reason to be concerned just because of the part of the world that they come from. But the risk here is that many of them are not encountered by CBP. They're not encountered by law enforcement, and they are here. And the ones that they do encounter, we have verifiable proof. These are CBP numbers, well over 700 people who are on the terrorist screening database. That means this country has identified them as a threat, not somebody else. This isn't hype. It's not just because of where they live, but there's actual intelligence that says we have a concern about this person's background and their affiliations, and they're encountered by CBP at the border. So that threat is in the mix. And then think about the people that are coming, you know, a nice plane ride to Martha's Vineyard, a nice motor coach ride to New York City. What about the people that are in the pipeline in the Darien Gap in Guatemala who are left behind regularly by smugglers? You know, they have untreated diseases, and if they fall out of the group that they're walking through the jungle with, guess what? Those smugglers don't circle back and get them a rescue flight into the nearest hospital. No, they're left behind. And that's the physical operational dangers that they face coming through that pipeline. We saw the truck a couple of months ago in San Antonio where those poor people were abandoned by their smuggler inside of the back of a trailer, and 50-some of them died, the most horrific death you could imagine. And then the human trafficking, right? So these people are being picked off in the pipeline, and when they come into the United States, they're sold as indentured service or worse. You know, they're put into the sex trade. They're raped and abused by smugglers, and people settle in the worst neighborhoods in this country, right? So what's the upside here? The upside is here that they're coming, many of them are coming for economic benefit, but along the way, there's lots of risks for them as well. It's not a pleasant journey.
I know you kind of addressed this off the top, but I'm always interested when the White House changes their messaging strategy, and the new messaging is, this is new, this is a new invasion at the border, and we're powerless to stop it because Venezuela, Nicaragua, Ecuador, or whatever the hell, they're now, you know, new countries. Somehow because they're coming from Cuba, Venezuela, and Nicaragua, this is why it can't be dealt with. First of all, is that true? That this new overwhelming flow is from Venezuela, Nicaragua, and Cuba, and they're fleeing communism, and there's not a thing we can do about it. Is that even true? And why shift on this messaging like this right now? That it's a distinct new pivot to try to explain away an uncontrolled border. So what's going on?
Well, the first premise is they have no idea what they're doing, right? They had policies in place that would prevent a surge from Venezuela or Nicaragua or any other place on the planet. They had policies in place that they inherited that would fix this problem. They do not know what they're doing. So it may be true that we do not have an agreement to repatriate people to Venezuela, but that's not what he said. That's not what he said. We're working with Mexico. Why would Mexico help us?
Yeah.
If you want the people from Venezuela to stop coming here, you have to impose a consequence on their illegal behavior.
By the way, is there any question, Ron, that we can make Mexico jump tomorrow if we want to put the screws to Mexico? I mean, we're, you know, like most of their economy is propped up by our dollar, is it not? We could make Mexico dance if we wanted them to. Could we not?
That happened in the last administration. I don't believe for a second that this guy has the stones to ask Mexico in the kinds of ways that Donald Trump did when he was president, who said, hey, look, if you don't start helping us, we're going to tariff goods coming across the southwest border. He threatened, probably in a joking way, but people believed that he was going to shut down the border, actual real trade at the line with Mexico. I don't believe for a second that this president has the will or cognizance to ask Mexico to do hard things. But you're right. They are an important trading partner. They are key to helping solve this problem, but you have to have a plan. You have to have the will, and you have to be aware of what you're doing as the commander in chief. And I don't think that's the situation we're in right now.
Ron, it's always great to talk to you. Thank you for the real. I made this point yesterday. Guys like you never get interviewed by mainstream media. Politicians never talk to you. You don't see you on The View. It's like I would love to hear the women on The View host Ron Vitello on their panel to talk about what's really happening. Have you noticed that? None of you people that actually did the work and do the work are interviewed anywhere, except for places like this. Isn't that telling?
Yeah, no, they're not interested in balancing a story or telling the truth. They want to ignore this problem because they think this is better than it was before. I don't imagine they understand a little bit about what the threat we're all facing with an out-of-control border like the likes of which we're seeing right now.
Thank you, Ron Vitello. Always a pleasure. Come back.
Thank you, Chris.
Oh, good. Yes, I feel much better. Biden to address UN as Putin threatens nukes. I'm sorry. It just makes me laugh. Biden's going to... Vladimir Putin's threatening nuclear action, and Biden's going to address the UN about it. Oh, look out now, Putin. Emerald Robinson, our great friend, host of The Absolute Truth with Emerald Robinson. At frankspeech.com, you can follow the show and watch it there every day at Getter, G-E-T-T-R. She's at Emerald Robinson there. Her Substack account is something you should definitely follow and read, emerald.db3.substack.com. Yes, the world's despots quake in their boots, Emerald, when they hear that Biden is going to give an address. Good morning.
They probably really do because they themselves hate to have to listen to it. But I'm sure someone like Putin is laughing.
Like, what's he going to say? He's going to address the UN. Okay. And so I don't know if Biden's, I don't know if Putin's for real, but yeah.
Letter.
Yeah. A strongly worded letter. That's right. Yeah. So I don't know. For here's what's interesting. This interview that Biden gave to Pelley. It checks a couple of boxes, right? It answers that Biden hasn't sat down with any one-on-one interview in hundreds of days. He can now say, oh, yes, I have, Scott Pelley. And as cake and, you know, cream puff as it was, it still was kind of stunning and that the guy basically pledged whatever it takes, however long it takes, however much money it takes, until Putin completely withdraws from Ukraine, we're just going to keep doing whatever we got to do until he withdraws and declares Ukraine sovereign. And then he says, and by the way, if China invades Taiwan, you betcha, we're going to go in there hard charging with weapons and men and women. And I mean, you talk about warmonger, Emerald.
Well, yes, exactly. And I mean, that's kind of what they've done. They provoked, Putin, and they've gotten what they wanted there. So now, now they're basically out there provoking China on Taiwan. And clearly China already knows that they're going to get what they want with Biden. So I think everyone should be a little bit worried because, Americans do not have an appetite, I think, for military engagement.
I don't know where – kind of cut out on us, Emerald. Sorry about that. I don't know where Democrats are. I really did think Democrats were the party that used to scream and yell, no blood for oil. And I mean, I'm not that old. I haven't been around that long. But I vividly remember that Dick Cheney and George W. Bush were, lustful for blood and, launching false wars for oil and military-industrial complex. That was always left-wing speak as I was coming up and starting to understand politics. That's all gone away now from the left.
Well, the fusion is complete. The Uniparty has emerged. And so I think where conservatives complain about their party and giving in on progressive things and all these other things that we see, especially with McConnell under the Biden administration and where he posed Trump on so many things. Then now on the flip side, if you have true, liberal progressives, the one who were anti-war, anti-interventionist, and there are still some out there, and you see, people like Glenn Greenwald, who was considered a liberal, they say their party they don't recognize their party either, right? Or their faction even of the party because they've lost their faction. It's like Tulsi Gabbard. She's, non-interventionist. And so they're facing the same sort of conundrum on their side. And I think you just explain it by the Uniparty that is ran by the military industrial complex. It's ran by globalism and their goals for, the transition of the global economy, and it is nearly complete, that fusion, if not already complete, which I think it is.
I know that you are not a fan, nor am I, and, we talked with David Limbaugh earlier in the week about Lindsey Graham. I was actually on the air yesterday, and I was monitoring the cables, and I saw Lindsey Graham pop up on Fox, and I just went, oh, no. He was on set. With Fox and Friends. We already know that he pops up out of nowhere inexplicably with this abortion stuff. After the issue has been sent back to the states, and the official conservative position on this is a state's issue. This should never have been codified as a national issue. Lindsey Graham pops up and says, I want to make it a national issue. And all the Republicans are like, what the hell? I mean, even David Limbaugh said to me yesterday, I don't know what Lindsey Graham is doing. So I see him pop up on the set of Fox and Friends yesterday. I didn't hear it at the time, but I puckered instantly. I was like, what is he up to? What is Fox up to? Here's a little of what unfolded, Emerald, and then I'd like to get your reaction, if you don't mind.
You have some people that are supportive of you, of this move by the Republican Party. Herschel Walker, Blake Masters, Marco Rubio, Ted Budd, Cagey, Laxalt, J.D. Vance, and Mehmet Oz, and against Ron Johnson, Don Bolduc, and Joe O'Day.
I hope they all win. Joe O'Day is pro-choice. If he came up to Washington, he would secure the border. He would be helpful to the cops. He would stop rampant inflation. He would stop hiring 87,000 IRS agents. I'm not a single-issue voter, but I am pro-life. Let me say this. What should we be saying? The Democratic Party, every member of the Democratic Party voted to allow taxpayer-funded abortion up to the moment of birth, like China and North Korea. You know what all those people have in common? They would not vote to abort babies up to the moment of birth using taxpayer dollars. To the Republican Party, I am proudly pro-life. There's no shame in being pro-life. The shame here is to have policies in America like China and North Korea. And I will fight with my last breath to keep this country from being a nation that would abort a baby up to the moment of birth. And every Democratic senator voted for that proposition. My position is 15 weeks. France is at 14 weeks, exceptions for rape, incest, life of the mother, and states can do more if they want to, up to 15 weeks. I want to be a nation that's civilized. I don't want to be China. I don't want to be North Korea.
Nobody
when it
does.
Comes to the unborn.
You know, Senator, there are so many Republicans who are pro-life, but there are also a lot of Republicans who believe in federalism, in states' rights, and on things like deciding their own laws on abortion.
Sure.
And this federal abortion ban would go against that.
This is not a state's rights issue. This is a human right issue. At 15 weeks, a baby sucks its thumb. At 20 weeks, you're encouraged to sing to a child because
which
they can...
Which is what I am right now. I'm 20
okay,
weeks.
She's 20 weeks, folks. I don't care what California does on most things. I care here. I am not going to sit on the sidelines in Washington, D.C. and tell the pro-life community Washington is closed for business. I want 47 of 50 European nations ban abortion at below 15 weeks. Mm-hmm. So no matter what California or Maryland will do, these are human beings in development. I am going to advocate a national minimum standard.
What about Oklahoma?
They can do it. Under my bill, you can go below 15 weeks, but I'm drawing a line like Europe, and I'm rejecting China. California is adopting an Oregon Chinese abortion policy, and I do not believe federalism requires me to sit on the sidelines and watch a baby at 30 weeks, 28 weeks be dismembered. I will not do that.
All right, look, I don't know Lindsey Graham. I don't know if he's sincere. I agree with every word he said, incidentally. I'm profoundly pro-life, and I know that you are too. I agree with every word he said. The timing is strange, and I can't shake the sense he's up to something, and I don't know what it is. And to the question of this is a federalism states rights thing, he says this is not a states rights issue. This is a human rights issue. How do you read this? Because it's forcing all. Fetterman is using this in Pennsylvania, for instance, against Oz. And he's saying, Oz, what do you say about Graham? What do you say about Graham? You want to federalize this issue? You want to outlaw abortion nationally? It's making all the Republicans now have to answer to him. What's going on?
Well, I think that Lindsey Graham's track record speaks for itself. He has often sabotaged his own party. He's pretended to do something and never do something. So the fact that, now all of a sudden, Lindsey Graham is really gung-ho about doing something at the wrong time. And remember the argument that the conservatives have always used is that it's the state's rights. Now, would we, and like you said, I'm unabashedly pro-life. I'll let everyone know that. And that is, so they know where I'm coming from. I think everyone in our position would love for it to be banned because it's egregious, it's barbaric in our view. But this is not the time. And with Lindsey Graham, he's supposedly a politically savvy statesman would know, yeah, sure, if you want to go with this, we agree with it, probably. Still, again, I think a lot of people said, well, we said it was states' rights. But you would wait till after the midterms.
Yeah.
And he sounds extremely nervous in that interview. And I watched his body language. He seemed extremely off his game and very nervous. I think that often we give people a benefit of the doubt, but we've done that so much. And Lindsey Graham does not have a good track record when it comes to actually working for Republican voters, especially during the Trump years. While he did a lot of talking, he has fantastic sound bites on Hannity nearly every other night. As far as really being effective, he was not. And so for this to come out of all of a sudden, it's like, the Republicans should take it, given the state of the country and the economy. The Republicans should take the midterms so easily.
Yeah.
And it's like the Republicans on the Hill that are in the Mitch McConnell, mold seem to be making a situation where it would be believable for Democrats to even hold both houses with their antics.
I said a couple of weeks ago, as sincere as he sounds about life, and he makes a passionate case for life, I'd swear to you, the timing of this feels like a Democrat paid him a briefcase full of cash. I said, Lindsay, we need you to make this a national issue.
I doubt it's a briefcase full of cash, but it might be a briefcase of something that he don't want out there.
I guess. I don't know. It's a timing thing.
Money.
That's the problem. You're right. It's a timing thing is the point. And it's ill-timed. And I know that people who are fervently pro-life, as we are, would say, no, there's never a bad time. Well, when you're trying to win an election and the issues staring us immediately in the face are preserving the lives of those of us that are here right now, you know, the crime and the open borders and the drug abuse and it's the economy. There's so many things spiraling, circling the drain, and for him to just kind of like throw this, you know, big 2x4 in the road while we're barreling down the highway, it just feels like, where did it come from? I get it. It's sincere. But it's the same thing. See, they claim that Republicans are going to try to federally ban marriage, gay marriage. This was another thing that I would just say conservatives don't want codified into law at the federal level. There's nothing. The thing is, in the Constitution, there's nothing about marriage or birth or babies, which is why most of us take the federalism position. Let the states sort it out. And then, you know, Lindsey Graham comes galloping in with, nah, let's make it a federal issue anyway. It's like, what? Dude.
Well, and the thing is, if you took back control in Congress, you have a better chance of doing something. Granted, you have the executive branch who is all for killing babies, you know, all for killing babies. And it would clearly get vetoed. But, you know, you have a much better chance of doing it if you have more seats in Congress post-midterm. So then the timing after you took power in January would be much better than now, while it makes it, while it could invigorate a group of people who would not be for this. But, you know, I think you just, you know, for so long we try to say, well, maybe we're just looking at this. One thing I did learn, I'll tell you, Chris, in my years in D.C., and I have learned, is that if it looks like a duck, walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck.
Yeah.
And that's just how it is.
Coming up on The Absolute Truth, Emerald Robinson, what have you been working on? Again, the guy that heads up your network, the guy who's behind it, Mike Lindell, made a lot of news last week he didn't. He was minding his own business when they went and rounded him up. You've talked with him since. What have you learned?
Yeah, so Mike, I'll tell you, a lot of people, and it's daunting, I'm sure, when you get this kind of, the FBI shows up, they take your phone, they give you the subpoena, they tell you you're not supposed to say anything about it, right? We know that from Mike, because, of course, you can't tell Mike not to say anything. That's wasting your breath. So, yeah, but a lot of people who have not been out there that I know have gotten subpoenas, gotten their phones seized, et cetera, they're afraid to speak out, and they just don't quite have the resources or the platform that Mike does. So he is actually fighting back. He is doing a lawsuit. It's probably, I have to check and see if they filed it yesterday. It would have been filed yesterday, probably today at the latest, that is suing the Biden regime and the FBI for what he feels is unconstitutional on the First and Fourth Amendments. And also, I would say, and I haven't seen, I don't know exactly how the complaint's going to go, but I would say I talked to several FBI agents, Chris, who said that was a felony stop, the tactic they used. They learned it at Quantico. They're told to use it only in the most dire of situations when there's not another solution to stopping someone and seizing something or, you know, giving them a subpoena. And it was really unwarranted in the case of Mike, as you know. I mean, everyone knows he would just hand it over. They know he would. He would, you know, arrange to make a photocopy. So there's so many levels of complaint here. I'm not sure exactly what they were still working through it as of Monday when I had him on the show. So clearly we're focusing a lot on that, the situation with Trump. I have today we'll start out with a former double assistant attorney general at the Department of Justice under Donald Trump, who's also been targeted, Jeff Clark. He was one of the first people kind of really raided by the FBI back in the spring. And he'll be on today to discuss Judge Deary yesterday and that hearing. I mean, look, Chris, I don't know about you, but again, if it walks, talks like a duck, I was really disappointed in the Trump team's picks for special master. There's some people try to show me, oh, no, this was a smart move. I just felt like if this guy is out of the Southern District of New York, the whole district seems to hate Donald Trump.
Yes.
And then he was on the FISA court that rubber stamped. We learned they basically rubber stamped every FISA that went through. So, of course, they rubber stamped the problematic Carter Page FISA. We don't even know how many others are problematic, right? That one just got snuffed out and got public attention. So he was part of that, appointed by Chief Justice John Roberts, who is very problematic himself. I just did not think this was a good pick, and I feel that yesterday my concerns are probably validated. It did not go well for the Trump team, so we're going to break all that down, plus just the corruption in the FBI. And, you know, and this also gets there. Sorry, and I'll leave you on this. This is really concerning. This is just a lot of times these stories get pushed under, but it's the knock-on effect of what we're seeing, the politicization, right? So when Christopher Wray decided January 6th was a terrorist event, they moved all kinds of resources to, you know, focusing on grandmas that trespassed and the Capitol. And what we've learned over the last couple of days is that they've actually stopped going after child predators, right? They've pulled away some of their resources from going after child predators to go after these political investigations at the FBI. And that's appalling.
It's gross. It's disgusting. It is. And we've never, I don't know that we've ever seen people politically aligned with a political figure, just aligned, associated in any way. I don't know that we've seen such a mass roundup of people as we're seeing under this administration. It's shocking to me. Emerald Robinson covers it better than anybody else at The Absolute Truth with Emerald Robinson. Frankspeech.com. You can get the Frank Speech app and watch it there. Getter. They post it every day. Do you guys go live on Getter, or you just post it thereafter?
We post it thereafter. We always do our initial broadcast at noon on Frank Speech, and then you can see it on Getter and Rumble at 4:30 if you didn't make that. And then it stays on there for, you know, you can watch it whenever afterwards if you don't make it during those times.
And read her reporting and her work, great work. It's Substack, emerald.db3.substack.com. Great to check in again, Emerald, this week. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Thanks, Chris. Anywhere you go,
I'll follow you down. I've been warning you on letting polls dispirit you or impact the way you think about November from Todd Carney at Real Clear Politics. The polling industry has faced criticism for underestimating Republicans through several election cycles. Pollster Nate Cohen recently wrote that the 2022 polls could do it again. These continued misjudgments can undermine public faith in how media covers elections. Worse still, they can affect results of close races. Polling errors are not limited to Senate races. Polls in the last week of 2020 showed Trump losing in Wisconsin by as much as 11. Trump lost by less than a point. 2021's New Jersey gubernatorial election. None of the nonpartisan polls gave the Republican candidate Cittarelli any chance of winning, yet the race was decided by 3 points. These kinds of mistakes could affect the results this November and further diminish public trust in organizations that conduct and publish these polls. In other words, ignore them and vote.
This is WNTP, Philadelphia's AM 990. The Answer, a Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM. For more than a decade, he's been Philadelphia's destination for news, opinion, and passion.
My husband and I listen to your show all the time, and we just love it.
Love your show.
I think you're a wonderful combination of information, humor, and faith. I just really appreciate you being on the air. It's a beautiful day.
He should come visit. We have a beautiful shoreline.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer and 990theanswer.com.
Great to be with you today. Hope you're doing well. Middle of the week. Telephone number. No, I don't have those tickets anymore. I don't. I knew this was going to happen. I'm getting notes from people. Chris, I know the website says you're sold out, but Are you sure you don't have a couple of tickets out there for October 19th for your big event with Gorka and Prager and Gallagher coming to town? No, I really don't. Even for you. People have already tried to pull that with me. Yeah, I know, but it's us. Come on. No, you don't understand. It's like the Gestapo with these tickets. I have no access to anything. Like, the fire marshal will get called if we try to squeeze any more people into this thing. They sold quick. I knew they would. I'm sorry. There was nothing I could do about it. I tried my best to warn you that was going to happen. The only way you can do it now is win them, right? Fast Eddie, you can still go online and win them?
Yeah, you have to go 990theanswer.com. It's like the first thing you see. You click the banner with Chris and the other hosts, and you have to register to win.
So I hope you do win them. Those of you that have tickets, I can't wait to see you October 19th at the Fuge in Warminster with our big Battleground Talkers tour. Well, Voter Registration Day. Big national push was yesterday. Here to discuss it is our friend J. Christian Adams at the Public Interest Legal Foundation. And the reason I really wanted to discuss it with him is I've noticed something culturally. And whenever something pops in pop culture, I take note because it inevitably means it infects our politics. I noticed it during football, and I saw it with sports across the board. Sports in particular seems to be pushing. Civic engagement, nonpartisan civic engagement, and teams releasing their statements of, political... whatever you want to call it. I don't even know. I just heard the NFL the other day said something like every team, all 32 teams, you can go to their website and research their political statements on this and that. I thought, what are they doing, J. Christian Adams? Good morning. Can you decipher it for us?
Good morning. Thanks. Right. This is just part of the invasion and march to the institutions of any area of influence, whether it's the supermarket checkout magazine or the TV sitcom, or the NFL, or college football game. It's just what the left does, is they find a way to infiltrate it, corrupt it, and use it to broadcast their version of the world.
And here's what they'll say. I don't know what's wrong with you. What's wrong with voting? What's wrong with encouraging people to get involved civically?
Yeah, and that's where I kind of part ways a bit. I think that it isn't wrong. And if everybody was registered and voting in Pennsylvania, for example, I think you would see a very different Supreme Court in that state. If everybody was registering and voting in Pennsylvania, Josh Shapiro wouldn't have a chance. But unfortunately, too many people who are regular workaday Americans in the Lehigh Valley and Fayette County and Lancaster aren't registering and voting. And I think that's why Voter Registration Day is actually a good thing, because if you dig deeper into the electorate, you're going to see the Constitution defended.
Okay, so you're not actually uncomfortable with the NFL and pro sports teams and others pushing the idea that people should register to vote. You don't think there's anything necessarily subversive in that?
No, but I think the NFL targets their message. Don't get me wrong about the NFL and sports teams. They're targeting their message to certain demographics. That's part of the justice program. If you saw the amount of money that's being spent by leagues up and down the dial to create political outcomes, it would boggle the mind. And it's all behind closed doors, isn't it? We don't know how much the NFL Justice Initiative is actually spending to elect Democrats, but they are.
J. Christian Adams with us. He is the president of the Public Interest Legal Foundation. I'm hearing a lot of belly aching and hand-wringing about Philadelphia not being ready in a timely manner with the mail-in ballots, sending ballots out, getting ballots in. And I don't know. I'm not really concerned. I've kind of stopped paying attention because I always assume it's corrupt in some form or fashion. It's just a matter of to what volume. But mail-in voting generally is underway this week. What's the state of play with mail-in voting in Pennsylvania as you see it?
Well, the state of play is your Supreme Court ignored the Pennsylvania Constitution and found it to all be hunky-dory. And we're just going to keep chugging along with this illegal system that the Constitution of Pennsylvania doesn't allow and allows the post office to do what it does best, which is namely screw up and lose ballots and send your ballot to your neighbor's house and your neighbor's ballot to your house. And then after you voted, it ends up in the sewer and flows into the Delaware River. I mean, that's what mail voting is. And apparently some people like it. I don't. I don't think it's the law in Pennsylvania. We just won a big victory across the river in Delaware, where we had mail voting declared unconstitutional last week in a case brought by the Public Interest Legal Foundation because it violates the state constitution. You can't have mail voting in Delaware, just like the Pennsylvania constitution said you can't have mail voting. But the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, they aren't real big fans of rule of law, right? So who cares what the constitution says? Let's just have mail ballots.
Yeah, that didn't get a lot of attention. You guys effectively convinced the state of Delaware that mail-in voting was not the way to go, and they listened. That's pretty remarkable, or had to listen.
Yeah, Chancery Court ruled it. Now, of course, the state government is going to appeal because, you know, who cares what the law is, right? You know, let's do all we can to get the outcome we want, and so they're going to appeal it. We'll argue it in 2 weeks. I'm confident that the Delaware Supreme Court is better than the Pennsylvania Supreme Court when it comes to following what the words really say in the Constitution.
It is abundantly clear that there will be nothing corrected about the way Pennsylvania conducts its vote unless there is a Governor Mastriano. True? I mean, do you see any other scenario? I mean, giving Josh Shapiro any credit to fix anything would be ridiculous. Particularly related to this.
He'll go in the opposite direction because he's a hardcore ideologue. He's not even a regular, good old fashioned Philadelphia Democrat. As long as you send some Tiffany chandeliers and some jewelry, they're good to go, right? I would rather have that old school Philadelphia politician that is corruptible but isn't crazy, right? I'd rather have the corrupt, not crazy one. Well, with Shapiro, you get crazy, and so it's going to get worse if he's elected.
Voters in Pennsylvania should feel at this hour what? Because I don't want to dispirit folks. I think there's every reason in the world you should participate and get out and vote. But I do know there's a contingency probably in this audience that feel like, we know how this ends. They're going to find the votes for the Democrats.
Huge mistake. Their state is being hijacked by lawlessness in Philadelphia primarily with the sort of wink and a nod from the inner suburbs. And so if the folks who don't like that just stay home, it's going to institutionalize forever. It's going to institutionalize forever, and they need to turn out and they need to vote because you really are facing down the barrel of a radicalized state government that's out of touch with the vast majority of the state, because Philadelphia and the inner suburbs have this outsized influence because of the systems that have been put into place, the lawlessness that has been allowed. And so if you don't vote, you're doomed. You might as well move to South Carolina or Florida like all the sensible people do.
How many states are doing mail-in voting like we do in Pennsylvania now that goes on for like a month? How many states do this? Do you know, roughly?
Yeah. Roughly about a third. I'd have to pull out the chart, but basically, and it's always, you know, the let's stay blue forever states, you know, New Jersey, Massachusetts, California. It's like now that we've turned the state into this one-party rule, we need to put in systems in place to preserve it, and so it's usually those states.
Dick Morris was on the show a couple of weeks ago, 3 weeks ago or so, and his take was fighting about how our election system has been compromised right now is not fruitful. He believes that the best play for Republicans now is to just play their game. He said, we've got our couch potatoes too. Republicans need to gear up and door knock and beat Democrats at their own game in this new rules that they've set. Is there any merit to that in your view?
Well, that's why I started the segment saying why I believe in voter registration days, because, you know, we need to stop complaining and start getting people registered and activated, and not, you know, not woe is us, you know, Trump lost, and, you know, on and on and on about 2020. If you know, if that's the case, see, that's the thing with Trump. He drew people to the electorate that weren't participating. So yes. If those people check out now, then they will have lost their country just like they're complaining about, right?
Yes.
These new voters who voted for Trump you know, that weren't ever involved, the ones who are maddest about him losing, well, great, kiss your country goodbye if you want to check out, because you will have done it, not the other side. You will have enabled the loss of the country by your lack of participation, not the people you're fighting against.
Well, see Georgia for more, right?
Yeah, the runoff was a classic example, except you had idiots like Lynn Wood and Sidney Powell who were telling people not to vote, which is, yeah. You know, it's like, I'd like to know how much money those idiots got from Soros, because they were doing exactly what the left wanted, was demoralizing and starting to talk about magic voting machines that nobody could ever win on. And the people who talk about magic voting machines that are being controlled from outer space and the hobgoblins in the forest, those people are wrong, and those people are enabling the fear that there's no way we can ever win, because the voting machines aren't the problem.
Okay, can you explain? Because I guarantee there are people in this audience whose heads have just exploded when you said they're calling now, emailing me now, pounding on their keyboards. That Jake Christian Adams is a son of a...
Yes.
Okay, go ahead, explain yourself.
Right. Yeah, they've turned the show off because they don't like to hear this. The voting machines are not the issue, okay? The election was lost. I have an article I wrote in December of 2020 called The Real Kraken, What Really Happened in the Election. And you know this better than anybody in Philadelphia. The left used Center for Technology and Civic Life money to turn the Philadelphia election office into a turnout machine, to do it all over the country, in Detroit and elsewhere. They changed the rules of the election, as we spent this segment talking about. They didn't need the voting machines to play games. And look, the CIA can't keep a secret. The NSA can't keep a secret. If there was a conspiracy to alter voting machine code to split fractional votes, all this nonsense, then it would be out by now. I've been in this space a second to none for 15, 20 years. And when I was at the Justice Department, I looked at this voting machine stuff. It's not true. And the more you spend your time obsessing about stuff you don't understand, like some pagan village that doesn't understand where the rain comes from, then we're never going to win again, because people are going to check out.
Okay. Here's what I wonder then. Do you think that voting machines in concept are something that we should battle against? Just the use of them. Are you in favor of a machine versus paper system?
Here is the best system of election ever devised by man. You fill out an oval ballot with a pencil or a pen if you're really nervous, and you run that through a machine tabulator. The worst system of election is the kind that Idi Amin liked in Uganda, which is hand-counted paper ballots, because the people counting the ballots, and I've seen this with my own eyes when I was in the Justice Department doing election coverage in other states, hand-counted paper ballots, the people counting are always changing votes. Like, oh, I think they marked Joe Biden, not Donald Trump. Even though the X is on Donald Trump, they still cast it for Joe Biden. And if the whole system of counting is corrupt, which it is in many places, including, for God's sakes, Philadelphia, right?
Yes.
Then
yes.
You're going to see things get worse. You're going to see things get worse.
Yeah, it's like what happened. Again, you go back to the old reference of the 2020 or the 2000 election in Florida, and the dimples and the chads and that mess. Florida has been a role model in how you correct that mess. Yes,
exactly. You just have a better system put in place. Look, there's lots of places in this country that are one party rule. Philadelphia might top that list because of how you guys don't allow anyone from out of Philadelphia to even watch the bloody election. So what's going to happen when it's all these corrupt inner city people, like the ones who took bribes from your ex-congressman to spin the vote tabulator, who just went to jail in the last couple of months? What's going to happen when the whole city is counting ballots? These people are hand counting. I mean, really? I mean, I just had an epiphany on this, that I've been against hand counting for a long time. But when you think about hand counting in Philadelphia, your head explodes. It's like, you want all these people who I've seen firsthand running these precincts in Philly being the people in charge of counting? Oh, my God. If there was ever an exhibit against paper ballots, it's Philadelphia.
I still cannot fathom that we ever had, and I'm still not entirely sure we're not going to have, what they called satellite election offices. I cannot fathom that for a month or whatever, we're handing out ballots unsupervised to people who would then fill it out and just leave it at these satellite offices with Lord knows whom to be counted by Lord knows whom. And that unto itself I've never heard of in my life until 2020.
Well, first of all, it's lawless. There is no, because you aren't allowed to observe there, as your frequent guest and Elvis fan Linda Kearns has pointed out, that they did not allow anybody to watch the voting in there. It was a polling place that they called a satellite election office to block the other side from observing the process. That's the first thing. The second thing I'll point out, that actually satellite election offices are better than voting people in their kitchens using mail ballots and harvesters, because at least there's an election official who ostensibly took an oath, even though it's a little shaky in Philadelphia, but at least they took an oath, and they don't have an activist in their kitchen voting their ballot for them.
All right, so bottom line, this thing, people that are using them, are you supportive of the notion of people mailing in their vote if they're listening? I mean, some people choose that or prefer that. I guess a vote's a vote, or would you prefer people show up and vote on election day?
Well, it's a game of rock paper. It's a game of rock paper scissors. I'd rather them mail their vote in if the alternative is that they don't vote. But if it's either mail your vote in or go in person, go vote in person.
Yeah, J. Christian Adams does great work, president of the Public Interest Legal Foundation. Do you have a sense, I'll ask you finally, about midterms, Pennsylvania or anywhere else? I'm not asking for political prognostication as much as I'm asking about how likely is it that after Election Day we're going to be talking about these same problems again?
Well, some good news on that. The left-wing organizations that disrupted and annihilated the rule of law in 2020 have been largely dormant this year. Now, that may change next week, but so far they've been far less active than they were in 2020, because after all, Trump's not on the ballot, so the billions of dollars in dark money need not flow to their litigation campaign.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So really, for you, so much of that was motivated exclusively and only by Trump.
Extraordinarily so.
Okay. J. Christian Adams, thanks for your time. I hope you'll come back.
Anytime, Chris. Take care.
I saw some piece by John Stossel a few weeks ago that interested me. Something, I don't quite understand it, but something about a lot of Americans are starting to move to Puerto Rico because, I know I'm going to get corrected on this, so just know that I don't know exactly what I'm saying when I say this. All right, please don't. I'm going to get accountants emailing me, people telling me why I'm wrong here. It was something to do with the tax code and something to do with the federal tax code absolving you from federal income taxes, or a very, very minimal percent you pay in federal income taxes if you relocate to Puerto Rico. And there are a lot of people that are doing that now and reaping the benefits. Like, very wealthy people are apparently moving to Puerto Rico and calling that their home. And they're paying virtually no income taxes. And as such, you have a lot of people that are investing big time money in infrastructure and commerce and other things in Puerto Rico and really helping, as you know, that's often what happens when wealth and money moves into an impoverished area and people are incentivized to do that. The area benefits, jobs are created, wealthy people invest and that sort of thing, and they create more money. So naturally the left hates that, and they were attacking a lot of these wealthier people for moving there. But I bring all that up because I'm seeing that there's about 80% of the island now has no electricity. So every time I start thinking to myself, maybe Puerto Rico, then I see a storm like that, I'm sure AOC will be crying and screaming in no time about it. That will take, they're not doing a lot of talking about Puerto Rico generally right now, interestingly. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, it's just quick news reports, even just in town, just quick news reports about what's happening in the grid, but nothing real, nothing much else.
I wonder if they have faith that Grandpa's administration can help Puerto Rico if they need it. I would bet not. I bet they're not highly confident that they have the capability of being helpful to Puerto Rico, would be my guess. They probably don't want to highlight the struggles of people in Puerto Rico. If memory serves, though, Puerto Rico was hit by a storm while Trump was president. And it was just endless bitching and moaning that Trump didn't do the job well and didn't help the Puerto Rican people and blah, blah, blah. Now they're barely talking about Puerto Rico being hit by a hurricane. So you understand that. Okay. Yesterday, Newsmax called. They wanted to talk about the rising crime rate in Philadelphia, and I guess a little bit about the Senate race. But before the segment started, the producers got in my ear and they said, hey, Chris, we've got some breaking news. DeSantis apparently is going to fly some more people from Florida to Delaware. I said, really? And here's ultimately what ended up going down. You're going to hear this off the top of this segment, and I wanted you to hear it because I thought I was particularly good yesterday in talking with the Newsmax folks. And I was grateful that they invited me. We talked about a range of things. But I want to give you a little backstory. First, at the Wall Street Journal, our friend Corey DeAngelis, and I like Corey a lot with the American Federation for Children. Corey has been an advocate like none other to basically reform, if not abolish, the public school system as we know it and give parents true school choice in education. But he wrote a rather glowing piece, I'm sorry to say, in the Wall Street Journal about Josh Shapiro, which really ticked me off, if you want to know the truth. Headline, Democrat Josh Shapiro defects on school choice. And this whole editorial celebrates the fact, oh, look, Josh Shapiro's coming around to our way of thinking. The Democrats are giving in and they're starting to embrace school choice. His website and his campaign have now said that they support school choice. Corey, come on, man. It's called politics. Is there anything about Josh Shapiro and the Democrat Party that suggests to you this is sincere? He's in a tight election. Of course he's going to say whatever he has to. And of course he knows that he looks at states like Virginia where Terry McAuliffe lost to guys like Glenn Youngkin. He knows that schools are important. He's seen the polling. And so that's why the gimmick. Do you think he's honestly going to do anything to hamper his relationship with teachers' unions? Corey, come on, man. So he wrote this piece in the Wall Street Journal, and I barely got to it yesterday. And then Newsmax calls, and they want me to go on. Guess who's on right before me?
Oh, no.
Yeah. Singing Josh Shapiro's... Oh, this is so great, Josh Shapiro, Josh Shapiro. He's so wonderful. He changed his mind. I'm overblowing it a little bit, but Corey, come on, man. I mean, he's doing this end zone dance that Democrats are giving in. The hell they are, Corey. No, they're not. Quit writing these puff pieces about Josh Shapiro and going on Newsmax and talking about how Josh Shapiro's seen the light. He's pro-school choice. No, he's not. This is how liars, Democrat activist leftists like Josh Shapiro squeak into office because they convince, respectfully, they convince people like Corey that they're sincere. And that they've seen the light or they've changed their mind or they're really kind of moderate when they never govern that way. So irksome. So the next time I have Corey on, I'm going to have to deal with that. So, all right, that's first. So I'm sitting there waiting to go on and I'm listening to Corey gushing about Josh Shapiro. And then they get in my ear and they say, hey, Ron DeSantis is going to send some more illegal aliens to Rehoboth Beach. This just in, breaking news. That turned out not to be true. There's a hilarious story from the Inquirer today where I guess all of Delaware's liberals, Carney, the governor and everybody, they were all hands on deck. We got to get ready. The migrant flight's coming and we don't want to look, you know, flat footed. It never came. The flight ended up going to Tennessee. So this Inquirer, they're all so ticked off. I can't believe. In fact, there's a quote in this story from... who is this? Rosanna Lopenza. She'd been at the Delaware Coastal Airport most of the day. She's a volunteer at Casa de Venezuela, Delaware. The hell is that? Anyway, she's mad. She said, I cannot believe that somebody like Ron DeSantis can make us just jump like this. I can't believe this. We've been manipulated. Yeah, poor things. Poor Democrats. Feeling angry and manipulated because they thought a flight was coming to Rehoboth Beach.
I love it, man. I love it.
They're all on edge because they don't want to be embarrassed when these illegals show up in their liberal enclaves. They don't know what to do with them. So they call in the National Guard for 50 at Martha's Vineyard. So that's the backstory. I wanted you to know all of that was going on yesterday morning when I jumped on Newsmax, and here's how it played out.
We're following some breaking news right now. Reports that another plane full of illegal migrants is now headed for President Biden's home state. Hannah Edelman, a reporter with Delaware Online and USA Today, she's reporting that Florida Governor Ron DeSantis loaded up another plane full of migrants in conjunction with Texas Governor Greg Abbott.
Yeah, so here's what we know so far. Again, the governor only confirming in Delaware that he's watching this plane. But again, the plane that we're in, that's in question, is still on the tarmac in Austin, Texas, as we're being informed. It's expected to leave momentarily en route to Georgetown, Delaware. That is just a short drive from Rehoboth Beach, where President Biden has a summer home. That flight expected to land around 1:30 Eastern time, I believe. We're, of course, going to be watching this, monitoring this throughout the show. There's been speculation this would happen. We'll have an answer in a few hours.
All right. With us now, Chris DeGaulle. He's a talk show radio host based out of Philadelphia. Chris, this is another update to the migrant flight story we've been following. Your initial thoughts on this breaking news?
Well, I hate to say it this way. It is a crisis. It's a real problem. But I have to admit that this is reality. This is reality staring Democrats in the face. And in my opinion, this is Ron DeSantis and other Republicans like Greg Abbott. This is the courage to use reality and foist it into the face of Democrats who have pretended this is a border issue. This is a southern states issue. Now, as you all have reported in Martha's Vineyard and New York City and Washington, D.C., and now Delaware, they have to stare it squarely in the face and tell their blue state constituents why it's fine for the South, but not fine for them. I think it's a masterstroke, personally.
Right. Well, as the D.C. mayor there, she said, D.C. is not Texas. We're not a border state. When she received migrants flying into the city, as we saw yesterday, just the announcement that CBP had recorded 2 million migrants crossing illegally into this country. Again, this is record setting. This is for the fiscal year. It crossed that threshold for the first time in history. Chris, tell me about, you know, the fact that we're seeing these numbers and yet hearing from top officials that the border is secure.
It is gaslighting of the highest order. You know, in places like Philadelphia, there's a massive, massive crime and drug problem, too. And so much of the drug problem, the fentanyl that's pouring into cities like Philadelphia, is coming across our southern border. It's obviously not secure. I mean, when even people like Chuck Todd have to incredulously ask the vice president, the border's secure, as you just pointed out, 2 million people crossed it in the last year alone. You talk with anyone who's worked for ICE presently or formerly, particularly under the past administration, they'll tell you. The men and women who are actually doing the work, and those are the people that none of the Democrats are talking to, by the way, they have a distinctly different impression of a secure border than this Biden administration.
They're seeing it firsthand, right?
That's
right. When you've got towns overwhelmed by migrants crossing in, I mean, they've got to come together with the resources, with the shelter, with the food, with the clothing, which we saw yes. Martha's Vineyard come together for, you know, a night or two and then headed off to Cape Cod. All right, let me pivot to your hometown, Philadelphia here. You mentioned it. The fact that we are seeing crime rise there, violent crime. In fact, Philly police statistics showing that the number of homicides have more than doubled in the past decade. Tell me about this impact, Chris, on what you're seeing in your city.
If I may refer to a previous segment that you just did before this one with Corey DeAngelis, who's a great friend of the show that I do in Philadelphia, and I admire him greatly. But I have to say that any celebration of Josh Shapiro, the current attorney general of Pennsylvania, I'm not much for it. This has been the top cop in Pennsylvania for 8 years. He now wants a promotion to governor. And under his leadership, we have seen Philadelphia crime, as you just cited, spiral out of control. Homicides through the roof. We are 500 police officers short of the levels we were pre-pandemic. Josh Shapiro has done nothing. Larry Krasner, the district attorney in Philadelphia, will not answer subpoenas by Republicans who are at this moment, along with 10 Democrats, actively seeking to impeach him over his poor performance, his refusal to prosecute crime. We have Lieutenant Governor Fetterman, who wants to be the next United States Senator from Pennsylvania, pledging to release more criminals. That's what he believes. A third of Pennsylvania's criminals, he says, should be released. This Democrat Party in Pennsylvania is out of control. The idea that any of them deserve any kind of credit for anything or that they would get a promotion is outrageous. Meanwhile, if I may, Dr. Oz visited Kensington, one of the most drug-addled, dangerous cities in all of Philadelphia. He visited yesterday. He toured and talked with these people that you see on your screen right now. Needles literally being injected as Dr. Oz drove these streets, escorted three people to get help for their fentanyl addiction yesterday alone. That's really much like Ron DeSantis and Greg Abbott are highlighting illegal immigration and forcing Democrats to stare it in the face. Dr. Oz did the same thing with crime in Philadelphia yesterday. That's what's necessary right now, forcing Democrats to own what they've created.
All right. That yesterday on Newsmax, I was grateful to the folks for their invitation. And as you can tell, my incredulity is through the roof that we would be talking about any Democrat statewide getting a promotion on Election Day. Based on what? How do any of them justify it? How does John Fetterman, Josh Shapiro, any statewide Democrat, anybody running as a Democrat in Pennsylvania, how do they justify asking people for a promotion? Unless you're a hyper-partisan, based on what performance, what metric? It's hilarious to me that left-wingers now think they've got some sort of moral high ground. They stage these photo ops where they set out some cots and they want a parade for themselves. We're good Christians here in Martha's Vineyard. You called out the National Guard for 50 people and shooed them away. Yeah, look in Delaware how they were ready to spring into action yesterday. Yeah, they're real Christians. They're real people of faith. I love how the left is starting to lecture on Christianity and compassion, as if they give a damn about the mistreatment of people at the border or what's going on at the border or how those people are even getting across the border and what's happening to people once they do cross the border. They don't care about any about that. All this virtue signaling crap. We're the real Christians. We're the true Christians, and you're being mean. You're not Christians at all because you're forcing us to stare at this in the face. That makes you cruel and unchristian, you see. I'm not succumbing to their brinksmanship on Christianity for a minute. I'll have a debate with you on matters of faith any day of the week, you phony left-wing hucksters who now want to wrap yourselves in scripture and pretend that you're the next coming of Christ or something because you sat at a cot. Shut up. Karen's in Glen Mills. Karen, glad you called. Good morning.
So much for taking my call. First, that was a great spot on Newsmax. And just as an FYI for Corey, I've seen a smattering of signs that say educators for Shapiro in my area. So if educators are for Shapiro, then Shapiro is definitely not for school choice. So just get that out of the way. The one thing I wanted to do was just implore anyone out there that's listening that's thinking of voting Libertarian in this election to please not do it. I saw some Trafalgar polls that came out at the end of last week, which, you know, I understand the polls are the polls, but Trafalgar is generally reasonably reliable, that have Oz and Mastriano both within two. And when you kind of look into the numbers a little bit, and I noticed that like somewhere in the range of 3% of people in the that were polled are saying that they're voting Libertarian, and it's just a complete waste. You know, I understand you want to protest vote or whatever, but in this particular instance, what that vote's going to do is get Fetterman and Shapiro elected. So I just would implore people that if you're thinking about doing that, to please, please vote for Oz and Mastriano, because you're going to stick us with Fetterman and Shapiro, which would be a complete disaster.
You know, Karen, that Trafalgar poll you reference is interesting because it also has done a little research into what they call the submerged voter. I don't know if you read that or heard about that, but I don't know how close this election's actually going to be. And I'm not suggesting that you're wrong in what you said. I'm just saying I think when this is over, I would be very surprised if it's razor thin. And I'm not predicting. I'm just saying I'd be very surprised.
I want to make sure that there's enough that when the Philadelphia cheat is factored in,
sure,
that we're okay. And that's fair the enough. Thing that makes me nervous. I feel like the margins have to be high enough so that they can't, that there's not enough cheat to spin it the other way. Because I have no doubt that if something happens, like Shapiro will make sure that whatever needs to happen happens to get his butt in office, even if that means Fetterman's left out for some reason. But that's just the thing that concerns me.
Totally legitimate concern, and I hear you on that. I don't want to assume you're a woman because in 2022 we can't. Your name is Karen. You sound feminine, but these days I don't know. Are you, in fact, a woman?
Yes, I am.
Okay, not a they, them, or non-binary, or whatever.
No.
Yeah. I ask because I think women have a unique role and perspective in this election coming up. What are you hearing about the issue of abortion?
Nothing.
Really?
Nothing. I mean, I send my kids to Catholic school, so I don't know, perhaps that's the reason why, and the circles that I roll in are what I would say reasonably conservative, but I mean, I think
you've not heard any women coming to you, and I don't misunderstand, I'm not calling attention to this as though this is legitimate.
No,
I just
right.
We've been led to believe that Pennsylvania is full of women just their fangs dripping to run and vote for Democrats because they're so terrified of Doug Mastriano turning them into the handmaid's tale or something.
I mean, perhaps among some younger women who haven't had kids or or older women who kind of live through Roe and are, I don't know, but I don't hear anybody in my age group talking about abortion, and frankly, I think it's pretty disgusting if your number one voting issue is abortion.
Boy, I think you're right. You have so pegged it. I've long held that there's this group of women that can't even reproduce anymore physically
right.
because of their age, that live in this kind of hippy dippy throwback time that doesn't even exist anymore. You know,
right.
and they're still kind of living out their, you know, VW bug van days or whatever. And then, you know, of course, there's the young, woke, indoctrinated ladies. But I think they're in the middle. You're right. If you want to call them Gen Xers or whatever, the pre-boomers, 30s, mm-hmm. 40s somethings with families. I don't find those women to be rabid lunatics on the issue. I think you're right.
No, and I don't think that any woman or mother who's seen their baby on an ultrasound could ever think that way. I just, mm-hmm. it's just my own personal opinion.
What is your personal opinion on what people are talking most about? If you could, you know, in a nonpartisan way, you sound like you're savvy and you're paying attention. What are you overhearing people discussing as a concern or major concerns?
Crime and inflation.
Mm-hmm. Cost of gas, cost of groceries, that probably comes up, I would assume,
right.
if you know people that do shopping.
Yes. And I mean, I've had more conversations with people, random people in lines at Target or the grocery store or whatever, of people complaining about the prices and how much their bills have gone up and how they can't get anything. You know, there was a woman in line at Target who was complaining about not being able to get the dog food that she needs for her dog and, you know, how it was all Biden's fault. So, I mean,
really?
Those are things that I never used to experience before.
Yeah. So you don't think then when you hear this, do you think most people are sophisticated enough to understand where blame is to be assigned or they're just kind of complaining in general,
oh, yeah.
but don't necessarily understand where it's coming from?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was a woman in line at a Starbucks the other day. We were talking about different stuff, and she told me that Biden's completely demented.
On her own, not knowing your politics?
No. I mean, I just made a comment. Like, we were talking about how one, because there was one person at the Starbucks that was working, and we were talking about how people don't want to work and that kind of thing. And you know, and she said, and you know who's giving people all the money to stay home. And so.
Karen, your reconnaissance work there in Glenn Mills has been invaluable.
Well, no,
I hope you'll stay in touch.
I kind of strike up these little conversations and make little remarks just to see where they go with people when I'm in line.
Well, please stay in touch and keep us abreast of what you're hearing and seeing out there, would you?
I sure will.
Have a great day. That's Karen in Glenn Mills. See, that to me, it's anecdotal, but I think Karen is exactly the personification, and the exchanges she's having is exactly what Trafalgar is talking about, the submerged voter. They may not put a lawn sign in the yard, they may not say too much out loud, but they're going to turn out in November, and they're going to vote against this stuff.
This is WNTP, Philadelphia's AM 990. The Answer, a Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM. Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.